Hey, you're listening to the smooth sounds of Flocker Rocker, getting us into Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 102, Interview with Jack Kent. Jack is a comic book artist, animator, musician, and all-around do-it-yourself wizard responsible for three comics, Goals, Minus Tide, and Sketchy People. In this episode, we talk about where he comes up with ideas for his work, the inspiration that got him into comics, animation, and music, who the best frontman is, and the importance of doing his work for himself. Show notes for this episode are available at gwtw.co/102. Are you passionate and motivated to make the world a better place and wonder how you're going to market your work? Chris Martin Studios is a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Head to chrismartinstudios.com to see the latest goods produced for people just like yourself. And while you're there, sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. It's a great way to stay connected with Chris Martin Studios and meet awesome people changing the world. All right, you ready for this interview with Jack? I certainly am. Kick it, Flocker Rocker. All right, so Jack, thank you for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
Well, you got my name right. It is Jack. I grew up in Newport, Oregon, and I moved to Portland about 20 years ago, and I draw three comics, first of which the one I've been doing for over a decade, and that is called Gulls. Gullscomic.com is where you can join the flock. I also draw a single panel comic called Minus Tide, and my latest project is called Sketchy People, where I will draw people I see around the city of Portland, the classic adage of keep Portland weird. I wear that as a badge of honor, and the patrons of Portland wear it even better than I could ever hope, and that's why I draw them, because they are weird. And I keep myself busy with those three projects. Keeps me out of trouble, and I have a great time doing it. But Goals is probably the one I've been doing the most. It's the one I'm definitely flying that flag the highest, but just keeping myself busy with multiple projects.
So with Goals, let's start there. You've been doing Goals for 10 years. How did you come up with the idea of a comic about seagulls?
In a coastal town, they are everywhere. And that wasn't really the original moment, but the original moment really happened when I was behind Wendy's and there was a dumpster and it was just riddled with seagulls. And I was just going, you know, that's their natural habitat, is a dumpster. And if we had to go to the city dump and they'd be just all over up on, you know, the dump piles. And I was like, that's something. So that definitely you know, was the original idea for the comic. And when I moved up here and went to school and did writing classes and some cartooning classes, you know, I was like, well, let's do a strip. And I was like, you know, I've always wanted to draw some cartoon seagulls, and 10 years later, still going.
Yeah. What's been the response over the 10 years to your comic?
It's been mixed, because the comic's changed and grown and I've grown up a lot with it. But the overall, you know, response to it is, you know, it's really zany and lighthearted and, you know, wacky and pun influenced. And, you know, a lot of people come away with it, you know, it's cute, it's fun. And that's exactly what I want it to be, is that it's a comic. You can just open the book, read a comic, close the book and go on with your day. You don't have to sit down with a, you know, beverage of your choice and read for many hours to really get into it. It's lighthearted and easy.
Yeah. Well, what stood out to me too when I was at Rose City Comic Con and I'm walking down aisle after aisle after aisle is just like the simplicity of the character design caught my eye, because it was also on a flying V guitar.
Yeah.
And so why a flying V guitar?
Well, if a seagull is going to play a guitar, it's got to be a flying V. I mean, it just works so perfect for it.
Yeah. So does a seagull play a guitar? I mean, what do you do with a flying V guitar that has your artwork all over it?
I get done with school and I'm in bands and I want to be a rock star. And I am in bands and doing shows and doing gigs and albums and on and on and on. And I spend my entire 20s doing that. And I got tired of it and was like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I started doing the comics much more. And in the comic strip Gulls That I Draw, there's a character who plays the guitar. And I was like, well, you know, you draw what you know. And so, well, he'll be in a band, much like I was in a band. And, you know, one thing led to another. I go, well, what does his music sound like? And I was like, well, I'm still in contact with a lot of musicians. And I go, let's pick up a guitar and start writing some, you know, wacky comedy songs and give the comic band an actual musical voice. And that's why the Flying V is there, because I do play it. I'm playing it on albums. I'm writing the next record for it. And it's the ultimate music comic crossover, my two loves.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun too, because I downloaded the album and listened to it. I'm like, this is awesome. It's like, not only do I enjoy the comic, but the music is awesome, because I'm like, I'm just like, that's fun, you know? And it's just like, I like that you call it zany and you call it fun. And I you get that sense in the music as well as the comic.
Yeah, thanks. The album was totally written for a sampler. It's like the little like variety packs of cereal you get. You get your Frosted Flakes and Fruit Loops and Mini Wheats. That's what the album is, because it's a lot of people are going to go, what is this? And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to scare anybody off going, hey, this is nothing but death metal, or this is nothing but country. It's like, it's a smattering of a lot of stuff. Yeah. So it's something for everybody. So I definitely have to cast a large net, or I wanted to cast a large net on the first album to see, you know, I got something for you on that album, and come join the flock on a sonic, supersonic, you know, wavelength.
Well, my wings got clipped, so I gotta catch a flight. Emotional check baggage seems a little heavier tonight. Well, the Sky Mall's got my broken heart for sale. Another round of peanuts, it's getting me pale. Sorrow's on the front page news.
Not only do you have a comic about goals, you have the accompanying album that introduces you to the personalities in musical form.
Yeah.
But you do animated music videos.
Yeah, I figured let's raise the bar even higher. It's either that, if I raise the bar so high, if I don't go over it, I'll at least limbo under it. But I felt I was able to go over it for myself in that, you know, let's grab a song and make a music video. I mean, I've gone this far, and it just told me to take this challenge and go, let's try an animated music video. I've done simple animations. I've taken some classes and was like, let's just give it a shot. And yeah, the first video I did was Doot Da Doot, and it was frame by frame of animation. Took a few months to do. And I have a lot of fun with them, because the amount of time that goes into it is, you will pull your hair out, obviously, if you just sat down and go, this is how many hours it's going to take you. But when it's done and you actually see your characters move with music you created, it's really worth it to do it for myself. And that's why I do this comic and the videos. It's for myself first. I feel if I do it for me first, and whoever wants to fly with me, you know, let's rock and roll.
Yeah.
Or it's flock and roll.
Flock and roll?
Yeah, flock and roll.
Nice. So you mentioned, you know, that you saw a bunch of seagulls behind a Wendy's parking lot in a dumpster, just chilling in their natural habitat.
Yeah.
So where else do you find these stories from? You know, is it from just things that you see and you say, that would be great in the Gulls universe? Or is it your personality? Or just the random things that you see, like sketchy people in Portland?
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of things will be the earlier days of goals was definitely, I got to write a joke every single time. And so it's very, you know, I think the term dad joke gets such a bad slight, and I am here to defend the dad joke, and I'm here to defend puns. People say puns are the lowest form of humor, and I say nay. So in the early days, I would try and write a joke every comic strip. And as the comic progressed and the characters grew, I knew I could rely more on the characters. And the characters obviously were different varieties of myself, as you know, any cartoon is. It's just a reflection of the creator more times than not. And so the ideas that come now, it could be anything and everything. A lot of my friends are having kids, and I have a small kid character in my comic named Baxter. And so there's a lot of inspiration when I hang around with they're awesome kids and get inspired and see the joy of life, and they're so zany, and you know, that innocence of life and finding things out. You know, like seeing one of them adorably, she walks into a table corner and she hits her head because she's grown and she hasn't adjusted. She's not used to heights yet. So she's like, I used to be able to fit under this table. And then she walks in and just bonk. And then she looks around and like little things like that. And I just have so much fun with them. And they really inspire me to, you know, infuse that into my comic. So day-to-day things easily can just take flight in ways I never thought they would. It's really great, because instead of trying to pound out a written joke, I just let life become the writing force and let that craft a lot of my comics.
Nice. Over 10 years, I imagine that you rely more today on the daily inspirations, as opposed to maybe when you started, to where it's like, I've got to mine all this material and all these resources to find the joke.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's like the classic thing of, you know, a musical artist's debut album, they had their entire lives to write it. And then the follow-up, they've only got a matter of months. And I felt that at the beginning, it was like, okay, I got all these jokes. Let's just spew forth a bunch of stuff. And then when I kind of was done with that initial, you know, regurgitation of jokes, it's like, okay, well, now you got to start writing more stuff. And in the beginning, I was writing way more political and way more, you know, social, consciously aware, you know, mediums. And it was really the earlier goals. There's some kind of heavy stuff in there that I would never write now, because I feel I want to escape that. I don't want to, you know, surround the people with stuff that's already around them. I was like, I know all the stuff that's going around. A lot of people are, you know, having troubles with a lot of stuff, and I want to be an escape. I want to be, come to the flock, come to the beach. Let's laugh real quick together. And then let's go, you know, you go battle your demons and I'll battle mine. But together in this comic, we can have fun.
Yeah. I like that too, because it also shows that as an artist, you progress over time as well, that you're not stagnant, that while you're working with the same characters, you know, you're growing as much as they are.
Totally. Yeah. That's the beauty of it, is that you can really let them write the comic now. I can come up with a joke and just go, you know, I've got, starting with some dialogue, and just go, okay, this fits. Oh, this is Marty talking. This is totally a Marty line. And it's so nice to be able to write that way. And to go, okay, if you know, what would Baxter do? What would this, you know, what's Marty going to do? What's Abe going to do? It's really nice to just let the characters just mix, and I'll just be kind of a fly on the wall to this conversation that, oh, I am creating this, but it doesn't feel like I am at times.
Do you ever find yourself responding in real life as your characters would in the comics?
Oh yeah, easily. it's kind of fun, because my wife, she's such a trooper with me. She's got a great sense of humor, and we drive into work together. We drive over the Fremont Bridge, and there's pigeons that are every day up on the overpass. And every day, if they're there, we go into voices and we start talking about them. And of course, pigeons are so stupid, and I love them. But they're always, the running joke is that they're always having a big beer bender up on the overpass, because unfortunately there are always like dead pigeons on the freeway, and those are like the ones that are partied out. But I forget your question because I got sidetracked by pigeons.
Do you ever find that you're responding to like real world scenarios like your character would?
So I'll answer that question, yes, but actually give you the correct answer instead of a tirade about pigeons. I do respond because I'm still much of a kid at heart, and I feel that a lot of responses, you know, I see the world through a lens of comedy because that's how I deal with anything. So if there's bad news or things that trouble me, if I can just turn it off and disconnect it and move on, I will. If it's nothing that's, you know, that needs my attention forthright, of course, but it's nice to be able to escape with the comic characters. And, you know, I'm not much of a political person. I don't really want to dive into that like other people will. That's not my bag. That's not where I want to spend my time. What I want to do is I want to make people smile, and I want to smile too. And I feel let's do that. Let's create an escape through this comic.
That's cool. So doing anything for 10 years, you're inevitably going to hit the wall where you're just like, oh, maybe it's you're out of that initial gas of I've got all this material. And then you gotta work through, I think, that those feelings of just like, what am I doing? You know, am I on the right track? So did you hit a wall, and how did you get through that wall?
I would say I hit a wall every single day. And it's the challenge. It's the grind. You know, a lot of people draw. There's so many amazing comics out there. And if you're a creator, you will see other great art. And a lot of people, myself included, will kind of get discouraged at times and hit different walls. You know, I think the main wall that you're talking about is the one of what is going to keep this entire project going. Mm-hmm. And I've hit that wall many a times. And I feel that I'm doing this comic for myself, and I think the saddest thing for me would be saying goodbye to all these characters if I stopped, and I don't want to say goodbye to them yet, and I don't foresee it anytime coming close. I would, if I had to sit down and just go, gosh, you know, what's Baxter going to be getting into? What songs are Marty and his band going to write? If I had to sit there and not be able to go after that, you know, I'm not done. They're not done, and I'm not done. Mm. So getting over that wall is tough. Everybody deals with their projects differently. I've seen a lot of great projects come and go from various artists around town. And but for me, I feel I got my different projects out a lot earlier, especially through music. I've been in a slew of bands over the years, and luckily I've been able to do other comics too. So I do Minus Tide and I do Sketchy People, and I've been able to keep goals going as well. So, you know, I feel if I can keep adding the comics, that's great. I don't know if I want to ever delete any comics.
You've mentioned several times that you do this first and foremost for yourself. And I find that very refreshing, because there's often the opposite response with a lot of creatives. It's like, you can never make stuff for yourself, you know, only narcissists make things for themselves, and just there's almost this backlash and guilt that people like to shove on people for saying that phrase. And I find it personally refreshing, because it's like, if we're not getting something from our own work, why do it?
Right. I agree. And you know, it's a business. And, you know, if any artist or any cartoonist, you know, gets a little, you know, I guess into it, as far as like a viewpoint, I mean, it's a business model. And, excuse the wind again. I got another test coming up. Looking good, boys. But it's a business model. And, luckily I'm really fortunate that I've got a 9-to-5. And my cartoon is a glorified hobby. Mm-hmm. And I would love to do this hobby as full time. And I think that's where a shift might happen as far as viewpoint. But knowing that this isn't my bread and butter, I can relax a lot more with it. Mm. You know, I see a lot of people going to comic shows where, you know, they're making it. This is what makes them, you know, have a roof over their head and put, you know, food in their children's mouths. And that viewpoint, you've got to be more aggressive because this is life and death, you know, and so you're trying to sell stuff and get it going. And I'm fortunate enough to go, this is a glorified hobby. It's a comic about puns, seagulls, getting into trouble. It's for me, you know, and I can stop right there going, yeah, this is, I don't have to, you know, fight a fight that I don't need to.
You do everything from mm-hmm. animation, comics, writing, music. When did you learn that you were really this DIY, do-it-yourself kind of guy? I mean, did you grow up making, you know, like projects as a kid, you know, with your family, or, you know, or did you just, I have to do all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going back to the upbringing in Newport. If you've ever been to Newport, a lot of people go to Newport as a tourist and have a great time. But if you live there, it's kind of a sleepy town and there's not a lot to do. So growing up, I did a lot of art. My mother's an artist. And so that obviously rubbed off really well. My parents are divorced and I've got a great set of, you know, family members. I love everybody and we all are great and we all support each other. So I couldn't have been more fortunate in gaining more family. And everybody, my biological father and my biological mothers are my mothers, my mother, we're all wired the same. We're all workaholics. We all just get after it and keep projects going and stay busy and push ourselves. That's just the way we are. Being the DIY character, I like a lot because I came to that out of being frustrated in the bands I was doing in my 20s and knowing that I'm a front person, I'm a front man mentality. I don't have the singing voice to be a front man. That's why I just sing on, you know, goofy comedy albums. And you know, I always felt being in the bands and working with other singers, I would just look at the singers in my bands and going, you know, that's not what a front person does. You need to be more, you need to get out there. I only was in one band that had a true front man. And I was just frustrated in the music thing going like, God, this is how it should go. This is how it should go. And being in a comic and being the basically the drummer, the singer, the bass player, the keyboardist in this comic realm is great because everything lives and dies by me. I'm the ultimate say, you know, president, the CEO, and I'm also the grunt that, you know, sweeps up and closes shop at the night. So it's a perfect spot that I have total control of what I do. And I get to see everybody's who likes what I do is all off of my work that I've done. And that's the most rewarding thing in the world is when somebody wants to buy a book or somebody says, hey, this is awesome. That's all work I did. And that's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. So who is the iconic front man in your mind of all time?
Musically?
Musically, yeah.
Whew. Oh, I love, oh, music talk. Iconic front man. I think a good front man is one that has a real element of danger. It's a front man that is a little that can kind of scare you, and a front man that I feel is one that you would never like want to sit down and have dinner with. Like I feel like Axl Rose, Kurt Cobain, Wendy O. Williams of the Plasmatics. I feel like these like front people have this like bombastic, scary level to them. Like you can even go to the Kiss realm, like bigger than life shows. I'm a Dave Mustaine, Megadeth fan. That's my ultimate jam. Nice. But also, you know, great frontmen of, you know, like Ronnie James Dio or Rob Halford, people that can just really command a stage, Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden that can just own it. I really like that. But there's a few different options there for you. I think the danger element is one of my favorites. It's just a, a thing that kind of scares you and something that is bigger than life. And that's what the show is.
Yeah. What was the Megadeth song that brought you in and you're just like, oh my gosh, I can't get enough of this band.
I had a friend and he recorded me. He was older, or he was more mature than I was. And he had Megadeth. He rode BMX bikes and one of his BMX racers with him was a Megadeth fan. And so it kind of found its way to me and he recorded me Symphony of Destruction and Sweating Bullets, but I wasn't mature enough to appreciate the music. So I thought it was hilarious when I recorded the album or the song, I held the pause button on my tape recorder halfway in and it recorded the song at double speed. So it sounded like Chipmunks. And I thought that was hilarious. And that's how I got into the song. So I was like, this is great. This is so zany. This is so fun. And it took me a couple years longer to go, actually, this band is really cool. And I listened to it at normal speed, and it was great. So the Symphony or the Countdown to Extinction album was the album that got me into them.
Yeah. What I love about Megadeth is that they – really have that work ethic where they're constantly putting work out there. They're not just saying, hey, we did a great album in Rust in Peace, Countdown to Extinction. You know, we're going to keep, you know, forging forward and finding that new material. And so I find a lot of inspiration from even today of totally. Watching them create new work and not say we created our album.
Yeah, and I feel, and I think this goes kind of back to one of the other points you were talking about of the theme of doing it for yourself. I mean, a lot of people will go, God, just you're too old, hang it up, like your has-beens, it's over. And I say, no way. If you want to do it, do it. You know, if somebody balks at it and somebody doesn't like it, well, guess what? It's not for you, and it doesn't have to be. As long as it's for the creator first. Who cares what anybody else thinks? You know, you got to do it for yourself. And it's funny, a little side note about Megadeth is that I was cleaning out some stuff out of our basement and I found this old box and I opened it up and there's Megadeth did a comic book series and it was called The Cryptic Writings of Megadeth, I think. And it was a really cool kind of crossover, music comic crossover. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, God, no wonder why I'm doing this, the music comic crossover. You know, it's not new. I mean, you know, Kiss did a comic printed in Kiss blood. And you got the group Gorillaz with their comic music crossover. You know, it's nothing that new, but I feel what is new is that nobody's done, hey, I'm actually creating everything in the universe, mm-hmm. for better or for worse.
Yeah. I know another band that did a comic crossover was Within Temptation. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're out of a Scandinavian country and they did an album where they did the comic book crossover. And I think Dream Theater did it wasn't a comic book, but I think they've done some kind of anime crossover stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Dream Theater. That doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Those guys are very, very deep.
Yeah. Well, cool. You know, we talk about musical inspiration. What are some of kind of your, you know, artistic inspiration? Where do you draw some of that from?
Definitely, my mom's inspiration rubbed off a lot. I definitely was raised. I'm a '90s kid, but definitely raised in an era of much older inspirations. Because my mom, you know, we grew up kind of quasi-Amish. Like, we didn't have a TV for the longest time. You know, we didn't have a rotary, or we only had a rotary phone. You know, we didn't have a toaster. You know, so a lot of things are old. So a lot of my inspirations, like, I always go back to, there's a radio program called Duffy's Tavern. And I still listen to that from time to time. You know, there's Ozzy and Harriet, these old radio programs, The Shadow, Riders in the Sky, that I would listen to growing up. And that was kind of that older style really kind of got me going. And when my mom said, hey, you should read Pogo by Walt Kelly. And I was reading that and I had no idea what was going on. I still kind of don't get it. But the animation was great. And, you know, and obviously Pogo led to Calvin and Hobbes and, you know, growing up with that, you know, started to really get my horizons opened up. And when my mom brought home a great comic called The World's Most Dangerous Milkman, Reed Fleming by David Boswell, that's the first time I ever saw cussing in a comic. And I'm like, 13 years old, like, whoa, my God, this is amazing. And the line work in that is so unabashed. And of course, Far Side is, I always ask the question of who would be your Mount Rushmore of cartoonists? What four people would you have? And I think I would go Charles Adams is my all-time end-all be-all favorite. He created the Addams Family and did a lot of great single-cell comics for The New Yorker. Gary Larson, Bill Watterson, and I'd probably go David Boswell as kind of the he's nobody knows this guy. I'm a cool, got my hipster. I hate that phrase so much. I've got my outside source, the rare one, if you will. But there's so many great artists out there. But those are my swath. Those are my favorite.
So apart from all this stuff, I mean, you seem to be curious about a lot of things. And so, do you just kind of follow your curiosity every day to wherever it ends up? Or do you have themes and patterns that you tend to kind of move in and out of?
Probably the latter, themes and patterns that I move in and out of. The curiosity is probably more of a slow evolution of my work and who I am. I'm not spontaneous. I'm more of a safety first kind of guy. I kind of want to know where we're going, who's going to be there, what time are we in, what time are we out. I'm very squared, rigid. That's kind of how I operate. But as time goes on and when spontaneity does come in, I really love the mental reward of something off the cuff. And so I'm trying to branch out and get a little bit more wild in my days.
Now that you've gotten the band out of your system, now you can be wild and zany and crazy.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's people go, oh, do you play shows? Do you play out? And I'm like, I hate playing out in the sense of like all the effort it takes to go do a show. But the idea of getting a comic community together and doing an album release, and getting this whole thing going, I like the idea of getting back up on the stage and playing again, but it's nothing I want to do full time anymore. So someday to get back up out there.
So I have a random question about sketchy people.
Okay.
What's the weirdest thing that you've experienced on the streets of Portland that ended up in your comic?
I'd probably say the weirdest is the guy that had his foot up in the tree playing a flute. I still think it's the weirdest, like, what is going on? Like, it was so crazy. He had, like, these tight spandex. It was like, he looked kind of like David Bowie from Dance Magic Dance. Like, it was a little like, is that a cod piece in there? It's like, you, whatever. And the fact that I drove to park in there, I was like, oh, here's a parking spot. And I stopped the car and I look up and I'm just like, oh, let's back out of this. I have interrupted a moment and kept going. But that one to me is the most zany, sketchy person that I've come across.
So what story did you make up in your mind about him? What was he doing?
Oh, man, I feel he was seducing a tree with song. And, it'd be a much more happy version than the version in like Army of Darkness, tree person love. This one ended well.
That's good.
Or was that Night of Living? No, that
I think that was Evil Dead.
Evil
was that
Dead
one?
Yeah, it was the first one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a happy version of that.
That's good. That's not a friendly scene.
Yeah.
You've mentioned that the work that you do is for yourself. It's a glorified hobby. So in your mind, if you could turn this into your bread and butter, what would it look like? Would it be different? Would it look the same and you would just be getting paid for it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because I think when you make that jump, like my ultimate goal would be to take Goals minus Tide. That's a newspaper comic. Those are two comics written specifically for newspaper format. And obviously, if I were to jump that hurdle and go, hey, so-and-so wants to syndicate this artwork. And so you'd have an editor come in and, a lot of input saying, hey, we like your foundation, but we need to craft it this way. So the way it would look is kind of, it's tough to say. And I don't know if I'd, want to maybe make that leap if I had to change things super drastic. I probably would. And I think that goes back to the let's take on a new challenge and evolve. So I think the comic would hopefully stay the same. I doubt it would be the way I'd write it a lot. I think there'd be a lot of other inputs, and I think that'd be fine. Because if I can draw seagulls for a living, that's done. That's bread and butter. And that's butter, because they would get the bread. But,
I'm curious what the internet and technology has done for you as an artist.
It's been amazing, in the sense that, I was doing this comic on Blogger and MySpace when it first came out, and I had no idea that was a web comic, no clue. And I thought I was so creative doing a comic strip, 10 years ago. I was like, oh, nobody's doing a daily style comic strip. This will be great. I'll have my own little market, and welcome to Portland, and everybody's got a comic of some form or another. And even before that, and all over the world. But the internet has been great, because it's been great for everything in life, for just the ability to engage, the ability to broaden your horizons, for literally pennies on the dollar, has been amazing. And we're doing this internet interview here, and it's gone not without its challenges, because obviously with a medium like the internet, everybody's in there as well. So it's tough to get your voice heard.
Mm-hmm. I'm also curious about how you handle things like comparison when you see someone else's great work and you're like, oh man, oh, I could never do that, and then, how do you work through those comparison issues?
If we'll just keep right on theme, knowing that I do this for myself, that's where I got to go. I saw a comic strip where somebody had a seagull character, and he drew them with the eyes in the front of their head, much like, Finding Nemo. That's probably the biggest comparison I get is, have you seen seagulls in Finding Nemo? And it's like, yep, I have, and I love them. They're great. And the eyes are on the front of their head, and I had a huge battle with myself of, do I really, anthropomorphize my characters more by putting the eyes in the front of their head, or do I leave them on the side of the head? And I did a comic a couple weeks ago, a Sunday comic, talking about that, about Baxter imagining his eyes in the front of his head and how he didn't like it. And when I see somebody draw a seagull with the eyes in the front of their head, a little part of me is like, I kind of go, you're doing it right. You're doing it really accessible, and more people are going to identify with that. But I drew mine on the side of the head because that's how they are in real life. And I kind of wanted that wacky big eye. And nobody really draws them that way. And I go, that's my style. And I just got to know that it's my style. It's, with so many artists out there, you'll lose that battle if you're forever comparing yourself to other people. And that's why if you do it for yourself, you're in, you're set. It's like it's a classic joke of, how many guitar players does it take to screw in a light bulb? It takes five. It takes one to screw in the light bulb and the other four to go, yeah, but I would have done it like this. that's the comic thing. It's like, everybody's great. Just do your thing how you want to do it.
Yeah. And I think that's good advice for just about any creative pursuit too, because, you know, with the internet, we have greatness all around us. And if we spend too much time, you know, being like, oh, I could never compare, I could never do it, that's energy that you could be spending, you know, doing your craft, doing the things that you do.
Yep.
And I think that's a really great point that you made.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be damned with that adage of, you know, you get out what you put in, practice makes perfect. Those things, like that grind of doing it every day, and don't listen to the voices, just do your thing and, you know, collaborate with people and learn from people. If you do it every day, just, my goal is just be better than yesterday. Hmm. Just try and be better than yesterday. And if that's all I got to do today, that's done.
Yeah. So if you were to travel back in time to your young self in the sleepy town of Newport, what advice would you give yourself?
I would say, you know, don't worry about not getting a date to the dance. Don't worry about the zits on your face. It's cool. You know, your band, you'll be in a band. Don't worry about it. I think the advice that I would give, it's funny because I think our generation is definitely one that is more close to our youth roots than our parents' generation or grandparents' generation. I think the advice I'd give myself going back would be, you know, every day, just keep going, just keep at it, you know, and don't stop. And I feel that as soon as you put the torch down and say, I can't do this, you know, you've given up. It's that classic thing of I handwrite so many syndicates on a regular basis, and I get rejection letter after rejection letter. And it's like, have they fully rejected me? No, because I'm going to submit again. As soon as you stop, then the ultimate answer is no. So if you just keep trying at it, it's not a no yet. And just, it's not, nothing's finalized. Cause if you keep after it, that answer of whatever you want to obtain is still on the table. And, it's like the power of the ask, man. It's, if you don't ask, the answer is already a no. Mm. So just keep after it and keep putting your foot in that door and reaching out and meeting people.
Awesome. So final question for you, Jack.
Ooh, is this like Final Jeopardy?
It is, yes.
Okay.
The answer is.
Okay.
What are you excited about today? That's actually a question, but whatever.
Let's see here. I'm going to wager everything, Alex, and I'm going to say my parents are coming into town today, and we're going to have family day, and I'm going to have a birthday party for my uncle, and it's going to be luau themed, which is awesome. And my, you know, just surrounded by family is really good. And knowing that I've already got a comic done today, or almost done. It's actually, I'm drawing this guy right now. And if your butt crack is showing out there in the world of Portland, that's immediate admission into sketchy people. Finger in the nose, cleavage in the butt. You're getting drawn. I'm sorry. That's just sketchy. So if I can do a comic every day, and I'm already well on my way today, you know, family and comics, that's what it's about.
That's awesome. Well, Jack, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work and going down the rabbit trail of comics, metal, animation, and sketchy people. So thank you for your time today.
Definitely, Chris. Thank you so much for having me, man. And look forward to talking to you more. And everybody out there, goalscomic.com. You can see all the artwork, all three comics I draw, right there on the website for you. So come join the flock. Let's rock. Let's squawk. Thanks for having me, man.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. My thanks to Jack for taking time out of his Saturday morning to spend some time talking about art, music, Megadeth, and all of the things that keeps him inspired and motivated to make his work. And thank you for taking the time to listen to Getting Work to Work. It means a lot to me that you're here. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. While you're at it, head to gwtw.co where you can sign up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter, and find the various social media links to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You'll even find a link to my Patreon page where you can support my work here at Getting Work to Work, as well as future documentary projects and some online courses that I'm working on. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email on chris@chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.
You got fries. I see you got fries. You think you could spare a couple for me and the guys? Come on, just a couple. Your bigger size like you would even miss. Just a couple of fries. You got fries. You still have French fries.